Good morning, everybody. We'd like to call the Budget and Finance Committee meeting for January 23rd to order. Do we start with the Pledge of Allegiance? We
don't have
a flag. Okay. So would you call the roll, please, Marcy?
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of January 23rd, 2019, Director Abe-Koga, Director Canepa, Director Chavez. I don't know if she can hear me. She's here. Director Cutter, Director Kim, Director Niss, Director Ross, Director Wagon Connect, Committee Vice Chair Mitchoff, Committee Chair Groom,
present.
Board Chair Rice. We have a quorum, and I would also like to acknowledge the presence of Director Hudson in his non-voting capacity as board member.
Okay. Thank you all. So we will be, would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic of which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. 30-second delay there. Okay, now is the time for public comment for anyone who would like to make a comment that's on an item that's not on the agenda. I don't see anybody, so we will go next to the approval of the minutes of April the 25th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody abstaining or okay? Now we'll get to the meat of the stuff here and go to the item number four, which is the fourth quarter financial report, fiscal year ending 2018. Good morning.
Director Abe-Koga.
Good morning, Ms. Osays. How are you?
Okay. Good morning. Sorry. Okay, good morning. So today my presentation will cover the general fund fourth quarter preliminary financial results for the prior fiscal year. And as this covers the period from, oops, I'm sorry. Hopefully I'm doing this correctly. I think I went the wrong way. This covers the period from July of 2017 to June of 2018. And so our final audited results will be presented at the next scheduled meeting by our auditors. They will provide that presentation. So today, I will provide a brief overview of the general fund revenues, expenditures, investment, the general fund balance and unfunded liability, as well as our purchasing report requirements. Slide three, summarizes our major revenues for the general fund for the fiscal year and compares it to the results of the 2018 budget that was adopted. So overall, actual revenues exceeded our initial budget by 6%. And basically the main reason for the increases are due to higher than expected property tax receipts or county receipts from the various counties, as well as higher asbestos fees for renovation and demolition of applications received. And we also saw higher revenues in penalties and settlements than was initially projected. This next slide provides a year-to-year comparison and looking at the 2017 and comparing it to the 2018 fiscal year actuals. And when we look at this, we see the significant differences is in county receipts, and that again is due to increase in property values related to property sales and new construction. We also saw increase in the permit fees, and that's basically primarily due to the fee schedule increases that was adopted and implemented back on July 1st of 2017. We also saw penalties and settlements higher in 2018, and that's just due to more cases settled in 2018. Now we'll take a look at the general fund expenditures. And similar to revenues, we'll compare that to the budget that was adopted. And for this slide, we are showing consolidated salaries and benefits, regardless of the funding source. Not all positions are funded by the general fund alone, so there are some positions that are funded by grants. So for this presentation, we're showing the salaries and benefits actuals and budget for the general fund and the special revenue funds. As you can see, salaries is slightly higher than the original budget by 1%. And the main reason for that is due to the implementation of AB 617. We had to hire additional staff, and that was not known initially at the time the budget was adopted or developed. On the other hand, we see benefits is slightly lower than the initial budget. And that's primarily due to the fact that not all employees fully utilize all of the benefits that the district offers. In addition to that, we also have temporary employees who do not receive all of the district benefits. Oh, I'm sorry. Our operating services and supplies, this is only at 61% of the budget. However, we have approximately $12 million that has been encumbered and carried over to the current fiscal year, some of which are multi-year obligations. So there are contracts that are in place for services to be performed, and payment will be made based on those contract terms. This provides a comparison of the prior year expenditures and compares it to the 2017 to 2018. And we see that there's an increase in salaries. And again, that's due to increased staffing. And we also had a 2.7% COLA that was implemented in that fiscal year. We see an increase in benefits in 2018, and that's due to, again, increased staffing. As we have increased staffing, we'll have obviously increase in benefits. And we also saw an increase in health premiums and an increase in our pension contribution to PERS. We see a decrease in services and supplies in 2018. That's mainly due to reduction in professional services, and that's over various programs throughout the district. We saw an increase in capital in 2018, and that cost is basically associated with the development of our production system that continues, mm-hmm. and the cost of upgrading our financial system. This slide provides a snapshot of the cash balance with San Mateo County at June of 2018. District assets represents about 4.9% of the $5 billion in the San Mateo County's investment pool. At June, the interest rate earned on the pool was 1.9%. Here's a slide 8 shows provides another sort of snapshot, if you will, of our 2017 audited and our 2018. I call it audited. It's still being audited, but it's preliminary numbers, which is fairly close. And we also provide a 2019 projected fund balance, which is estimated at $33 million. At the bottom of this table, we also included unfunded liabilities for pension and OPEB, and that totals about $93 million, and that's based on the most recent actuarial valuation report. This next slide provides, pursuant to our admin code, as a part of the quarterly report, we provide a list of our a list of vendors that meets the that exceeds our $100,000 payment without board approval. These are routine business payments that we make. And the next two slides, slide 10 and 11, provides a list of the vendors that meet this requirement and comprise mainly of benefit payments, as you can see, for employees and other routine services required to conduct the day-to-day operations of the district. And I'll go to slide 11. But this concludes my presentation for the fourth quarter. Are there any questions?
Questions? Karen?
Well, I'll go backwards, but on that last
Mike,
slide.
Mike, Karen.
Pardon me? Oh, sorry. The third line item, employee association, employee union dues, does the employer pay a portion of that? I'm just confused on why that's a vendor payment. Is that a vendor payment to us?
Well,
or a payment to the vendor, I would assume.
Okay, so as a part of what we do is we make the payment on behalf of the employees. So, I'm sorry, the employees pay the dues, but we have to make the payment to the association.
You're like a pass-through.
As a pass-through, correct.
Okay, great. Back to slide. slides 5 and 6. Sort of as a comparison, operational services and supplies, I know what you said, that there's carryover, multi-payments, and what have you. So when we go to, when you all go to develop the budget for us to look at, and then looking at slide 6 where there was a little less than $1 million, are we going to adjust that down? Because I'm assuming that the operational services and supplies that are carried over are in the fiscal year 19, and fiscal year 18 will end with give or take these numbers. I'm just wondering how that works, since I thought, you know, a lot of times there's rollover, but when I look at the comparison of 17 to 18,
You're on slide 6, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah,
I was
trying to compare them. Okay. In slide 6, when you do the comparison of 17 to 18, we spent a little less than $1 million dollars from what we did in 17.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount is that 19,109, which we have back on slide 5 as the actuals for 2018. So my question is, the budget was 31.1 million. My recollection is your explanation was we have a lot of outstanding contractors who haven't put their bills into us, or we haven't paid them yet. It's just the normal course of business.
Correct, yeah.
So when we go to the 2019 budget, is that accounted for in the 2019 budget as opposed to the 2018 budget? Are we going to make the 2019 budget give or take the 31 plus 19, or we're going to keep it at around the 31, 32, knowing that, I mean, that's just a larger amount. It was 11 million more than in 17. We must have anticipated this. Okay, I guess I'm not asking it correctly.
Okay.
So we anticipated having more operational services and supplies. We haven't been billed for those yet for whatever reason. Are they being built into the 2019 budget?
Stephanie, if you go back to the comparison slide of year
sure.
to year, I think the important point, Dr. Machoff, is up in the label, the top column there. So both 2017 and 2018 say as of 6/30. So, which I think is exactly sort of what you were addressing. So we're comparing how much money has been spent as of a specific date.
Yeah. So back to slide 5, I'm sorry, I should have seen that. So as of 6/30, we'd only spent 61% of the budget. When you're finished with the calculations as of 12/31/18, that percentage will be much higher.
Exactly.
And the payment, I got it.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
Director Wagner.
We're predicting at this point a $33 million, we're on slide 8, we're predicting $33 million end of fund balance.
That's correct.
At this point, you know, last year we ended up with $50 million, and the year before $45 million at end of fund.
Mm-hmm.
At this time last year, what was our prediction for an end of fund balance?
I want to say it was around 45 or something like that. I think
so.
We had about
relative apples and apples, we're about 10 million off of where we were last year in our end of fund balance prediction.
Right, and I think in
Director Wagner, we purchased some real estate.
We bought Richmond.
Good. Okay.
Director Husson.
On slides 3 and 4, I'm looking at county receipts, Stephanie.
Correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is all property tax, or for the most part, property tax from counties coming in?
That's correct. That's pretty much all of the nine Bay Area counties that we would get property tax revenue from.
Okay, and four, I see it went up $2.5 million.
From the prior year.
Yeah, and looking at what the budget, and I think it's probably sound, what you don't jump up real high. It wasn't going to be a borderline nothing that we couldn't predict. But it did go up quite a bit, and what I'm trying to figure out is who drove this up, which counties? Because, I mean, we lost 5,000 homes in here, and I'm trying to get an idea before we do the next budget of what effect these fires had and what effect this boom has, just in case some of us start to believe that the boom might not be booming as much next year.
Director Hudson, that's a very good point. We do project property taxes county by county, and you're seeing the aggregated number. And Stephanie has actually been working carefully with individual counties on their projections, including the modifications that have to be made based on exactly the topics you're talking about. In my presentation, the last presentation today, we'll talk a little bit about real estate trends. It'll be similar to what you saw from Leonid Bach, our economist, at the full board meeting. And then in February, we will be revisiting the financial plan again, and we can go into county by county detail at that time if you like.
Director Chavez.
Thank you very much. I'm wondering, I'm looking at slide number 11, and this is our vendor payments in excess of $100,000 without board review. Interested in knowing, and this could be at a future meeting, is whether or not any of these or some of these started out with an RFP or an RFQ, and when and if any of these would be for an RFP or an RFQ.
Yes, Dr. Chavez, I believe the Fleet Services, for instance, did have an RFP, RFQ. And so if we were to revisit that contract, that would come back to the board.
Yeah. A number of these, our software contract, were initially bid, as was the contract for the direct mail. Those do go on RFP. But if you take a look at the majority of the items here, you're seeing mostly kind of our core utilities, things like PG&E. And the reason that we choose to report these in this fashion is that, for the most part, they're utilities. Even though we did have an initial bid when we did subscribe to Microsoft, it's a core utility. It's not something we'll be able to get away from. They're our primary service provider. But we will be happy to bring that back and let you know which ones did go out on RFP and the dates.
And also when we would reconsider these, because over the life cycle of these, one, there are a lot of money, but two, it would be, I think, important to understand when we're opting not to bring an RFQ or an RFP. And the two that have caught my attention, in addition to the insurance services, is also the legal services. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Anyone else? All right. No further questions? Mr. McKay, you have any? Ms. Stephanie, any further comments?
No, okay. We don't.
All right. With that, we will go to the next item. Lost my agenda. Now we will go to the first quarter financial report, item number 5.
Great. So this is similar to the fourth quarter, except it's the first quarter of our current fiscal year. So the structure of the report is similar. I will be brief on this report, so feel free to ask me questions. It is the first quarter, so there's not a lot of activity, as you've seen in the previous report. So this covers through September of 2018 for the first quarter. The second quarter will be presented at the next budget and finance meeting in February. And as we could see from slide three, we're looking at our revenues we recognized for the first quarter, and that is currently overall at 40%. And this is sort of typical of where we expect to be. Our county receipt is only 1%, and that's due to the fact that we don't really get our first large installment until the second quarter of the fiscal year. So you'll see a much larger percentage there for the next quarter report. Our permit fees are normally billed during the first and second quarter, so this is sort of consistent with what we expect for the first quarter. Our interest revenue is higher in the general fund, and that is due to a higher cash balance, again, because we haven't fully paid out some of our vendors yet. Obviously, we have a higher cash balance. This, as Jeff mentioned, that we do anticipate that the cash balance will be reduced, actually happened, with the recent purchase of the real estate at for Richmond and the purchase of additional space here at this building. So we don't anticipate our interest revenue to continue to grow at this pace. Sorry. This slide provides a revenue comparison looking at the prior year first period or first quarter and the current fiscal year 2019. And the main thing I want to point out here is that our permit fees increased in 2019, and it's basically due to two factors. One being the increase in our fee schedule, which was effective July 1st of 2018. And then we also had an adjustment to some of our fee payers' anniversary date in order to comply with Rule 1215. So the anniversary date had to be moved from August to December, which resulted in capturing four additional months of fees. So our billing period, rather than it being 12 months, it ended up being 16 months. This is a one-time adjustment, however, and next year it'll be set back to a regular 12-month period. I know I had to. Thank you. So now we go to our general fund expenditure, and we're looking at comparing that to our budget. And as you can see, overall, our actual expenditure represents about 20% of the budget, which is pretty consistent. I mean, you expect to be around 20-25%. So what we see here is, again, looking at our consolidated salaries and benefits, we see salaries are slightly lower at 25%, and that's just due to still having current vacancies. Our benefits, however, we see is much higher than 25%, and that's due to the lump sum unfunded liability payment we had to make to PERS at the beginning of the quarter. There's really not much more to say there. And then I'll look at expenditures. So for looking at our expenditure comparison on this slide, and we're doing the year-to-year comparison for the first quarter, we see an increase in salaries. And again, that's due mainly, again, to increased staffing than you would have seen in 2017. And then we also had a 3.1% COLA that was effective at July 1st of 2018. Benefits increase, and as I mentioned before, that's due to the PERS unfunded liability payment that increased from the prior year, as well as some of our health premiums also increased. This provides another snapshot of our cash with the county, and this is based on September 2018 account balance. And our district account represent about 5.8% of the $4.3 billion that was in the investment pool at that time in September. The interest rate earned on the pool was 2.03%. This is the same slide that you saw in the fourth quarter report, so I won't review it again. It's just a consistent presentation that we provide in the quarterly report. And again, to our requirement of providing a listing of all the vendors that exceeds 100,000. This is a slightly shorter list. But again, this is mainly consistent of the benefits that we pay out. And of course, we have some vendors related to our day-to-day operations. And this concludes my presentations. Is there any question?
Questions?
Karen?
Okay, I'm going back to where, sure. I know what you said, Mr. McKay, that it, that on the last presentation it was as of June 30, 2018. So there was still $12 million that hadn't been spent. So now when we look at the 19 budget, the operational, I'm on slide five, operational services and supplies is 29.6, and we've spent 3.1. Is part of that 3.1 what was carried over? In other words, we, in 2018, we thought there it would go up, it looks like in, let's see, 2017, our budget was $20 million. In 2018, our budget is $31 million. And then in 2019, our budget is $29 million. I'm just trying to account for such a huge disparity of that $12 million. And what I understood is you said there were carryovers that were going to get paid for in this fiscal year.
Yes.
So that is part of that $29 million that we budgeted for 2019. Am I correct, or is that additional?
Correct. So this is, so part of the actual, the 3.1 is partially some of those contracts that are being paid in the first quarter of the fiscal year.
That's where I'm getting at. The $29 million that we budgeted for 2019, since it's it is accommodating those payments that weren't made but services were performed.
So the 2019 budget is what we anticipate to spend this year. Does not include the previous fiscal year. We do carry that over as a part of the budget action. We ask the board to carry over those encumbrances.
Let's just say they were all paid, that $12 million that's not accounted for, in 2019. Will that show then that we will have spent, give or take, $43
million? We will adjust.
$41
million? Yeah, we will amend the budget to reflect any of those carryovers
and
of encumbrances.
Yes, we do this almost every year.
Okay, that was my next question. Then we need to get a better number then, it seems, for that. Thank you.
Jack, I'm glad you were able to come back. Director Chavez was asking some questions about contracting and when we put out RFQs and RFPs, and so I wonder if we could put that on our next agenda and kind of have a review of it. Okay.
Thank you, because I'd like to know, in our county, we have sort of a three-year policy, and if the Air Board does.
Super. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Now we will go to the fifth item, which is the sixth item, which is our Air District Financial Plan Overview. And I just like to make a little editorial comment. I was delighted to see this.
Thank you, Chair Groom and members of the committee. I'm glad. Thank you for that comment. I will endeavor to remain glad. So every year around this time, we present to the committee a mid-year financial status. How's the Air District doing financially? And that's what we're doing today. What that means is every year around this time, we talk about our financial history, we talk about the status of our current reserves, we talk about our unfunded liabilities, we talk about our policies. And that conversation then creates a context for March when we start the budget process. And so it's important to have that context. And you know, so of course what that means is that the presentation, this mid-year presentation, this financial status presentation is a resource that we go back to. And so what we're doing here is we're basically taking that annual presentation and not just providing it as a deck of slides, but also creating this document that we're calling a financial plan. A little bit of a grand name for this modest document, but I think it will grow into its name over the years. Just in summary for this presentation, I'll say I think we're all aware we're in pretty good financial shape. So the focus of our thinking is if we are, as is possible, near a peak of a financial cycle, are we positioned properly? And that will be probably the most important part of this conversation, and we'll be revisiting this again in February. I mentioned this is a type of presentation we do every year, the annual mid-year financial status. But there is one element that's going to be relatively new, and that is we're going to expose more of the detail, not all the detail, but more of the detail about how we do long-term financial modeling. And the reason it's important for us to talk about this now is at the last downturn, that financial modeling and doing it carefully and doing it right served us very well. I'm going to talk about that. And so I think it's appropriate to hear where we are, possibly get at a peak, to talk about how we model. I may have just gone the wrong direction. Let's see. So the purpose of this plan is to capture and retain Air District pre-budget planning processes in a document that's not just a PowerPoint. And as I just mentioned, the element that you'll see is a little different is we'll talk in a little more detail about how we do fiscal forecasting and our five-year forecast. This is the first year that we're providing this in this format. It is a living document. We expect to be updating it continuously. So I'm going to talk about history first. Then I'll talk briefly about our current fiscal status, which is fortunately not much to say there, pretty simple and boring. That's what we projected it to be. Then I'll talk about this financial forecast that I've just alluded to, and then our unfunded liabilities, and finally our policies. So let's start with history. I'm going to talk about history of reserves, history of revenue, history of expenditure. We did use our reserves during the downturn. We drew them down to meet general fund obligations, but I think it's important to point out, just as a prelude to talking about reserves, reserves weren't the only tool we used. When we had the downturn hit, we carefully used a variety of tools. We let attrition increase our vacancy rate. We put off some expenditures. You may recall what our building looked like back then. We did defer some capital investment. And thank you very much. We initiated the cost recovery policy. That was a big help. So here's this important slide that we look at every year. This shows our general fund reserves, our actual reserves compared with the policy minimum. And back in 2007, we had quite a healthy reserve, but we had to go to the board and say, we're going to need to draw down these reserves, not for one-time capital expenditures, things like that. We're actually going to need to draw them down for general fund obligations. And our commitment to the board at the time was that we would do it with great foresight and think carefully about what we're doing, and because you can't draw down your reserves forever. And so this slide sort of illustrates, I think, if I may say, the positive results of that careful planning, because we did draw down reserves over multiple years, carefully and slowly, and we just touched the minimum, our policy minimum there in 2011, and then we were able to slowly build the reserves back up. And so we would want to, if we had to, once again be able to execute that sort of play, so to speak. I'm just going to quickly go through historical revenues and expenditures. It's pretty much what you would expect, kind of flat for several years, and especially in 17 and 18 here, we're growing thanks to a healthy economy and the cost recovery policy, which is taking us towards 85% cost recovery, and of course, a healthy property market. And our historical expenditures, we got ourselves in a bit of a bind, being optimistic in 2007 and increasing our budgets. And we then had to keep them flat or even reduce them for a few years. But again, 17 and 18 now, we certainly are increasing our expenditures based on our new obligations. And of course, you see also there the Beale Street down payment in 2017. Now, cost recovery is an important component of meeting our revenue goals. So I just want to briefly reprise that topic. Several years ago, the board, rather than saying, let's just revisit cost recovery anew every year, let's create a policy to give us guidance. And so the policy put in place was, let's have at least 85% funding. And what that means is we're allowed by law to actually recover 100% of our costs for our basic services that we provide. But let's have a target of at least reaching 85%. But let's get there at a measured pace that the regulated industry can anticipate, because regulated industry appreciates the ability to project the future and not be hit with surprises. So we've been doing pretty moderate 6.4% annual fee increases on our march towards 85%. We are getting close to 85%, but it's important to point out that we have quite a large vacancy right now. So as we fill those vacancies, we will be challenged to stay at 85%. We'll probably see that drop a bit. So this is the history of our cost recovery. We were actually in pretty bad shape a few years ago. I'll just point out one little mathematical problem with improving cost recovery. We can only increase our fees by a certain percentage every year. And if we're down as low as 50%, then that percentage increase is only an increase of 50% of cost recovery. So it can be very difficult to get back up to reasonably high cost recovery. I'm going to very briefly talk on our current financial situation. It's pretty simple. We're on budget, as Stephanie has described, relative to revenue expenditures, and our reserves are quite healthy. Our reserves are currently projected to be $33 million after the purchase of our Richmond property and a portion of the eighth floor here. You'll notice that the minimum policy here, 20% of budget, is shown as $19 million. And the reserves then we have above that minimum is 14. If I remember right, we had two different forms of rounding for this slide and the next one. So I think you'll see 20 and 13, and the next one still 19 and 14. Yeah, there we go. We'll fix that. So we've got total reserves of $33 million, and about 13.5 actually of that is above our minimum. So now we're going to venture into the part of the plan. It's a little different than what we've done before, where we expose a little bit more about how we do forecasting, multi-year forecasting. And fortunately, we've brought on board recently our new economist, Leonid Bach, who spoke at the board meeting last week. And he's been a great value in helping us improve even further our ability to do this work. Obviously, the U.S. right now is growing, but we don't know that that will continue. And there is, according to our economist, a consensus that a recession could be likely in the next couple of years. California, of course, is doing very well. But the problem there is, since we have a high concentration of certain types of industries, we can have more volatility than you see in the state or in the country in general. And this is a great illustration of that. Or it would be an even better illustration if the United States bars hadn't disappeared. Those blue California bars had next to them United States bars, and I'll just describe them. Basically, what you see is the U.S. as a whole is less volatile than California, and California is less volatile than the Bay Area. So overall, the Bay Area will reach higher growth rates than California as a whole in the U.S., but will also suffer greater dips. And so that is another reason why we do consider it to be important to plan ahead on this. Our financial forecast is a five-year forecast, and it's based on our crystal ball on trends. It's based on our current financial policies and some economic financial assumptions that we've put in place. Right now, we're relatively optimistic about the next 5 years, but with some caution. I want to talk about our assumptions. We're assuming that AB 617 funding continues from the state. Now, we got the good news that that's true at least for another year, but we don't have absolute knowledge about that going further out. We're assuming this cost recovery policy of 85% continues, that we are not increasing staff, and that we are continuing the funding of our unfunded obligations that we've put in place over the last few years. Property tax and permit fees are most of our revenue. So we have seen 7% growth in the past 3 years on our property tax. We're not going to assume that. We're going to assume 5% increase for the next 2 years, and then we're going to drop that to 3%. And here's part of the reason why. This is pretty interesting. Leonid Bach showed this a week ago. The Bay Area was growing faster, population growth was growing faster than California or the rest of the country until recently, and that has just dropped off at an incredible rate. And this next slide, I think, illustrates one possible reason why. This is a very busy slide, but there's really just one little point, I think, to look at here, and that is California, Bay Area real estate has always been expensive compared to the rest of the U.S., but it's the relative percentage by which it's been expensive has been reasonably constant until you can see there around 2012, the appreciation rate, not just the prices, but the appreciation rate for the Bay Area took off, and things tend to revert to the mean, so this can't continue. Permit revenues. Permit revenues are determined by the fees that we impose. We've seen annual revenue increases 6.5% over the last 3 years, but we're not going to assume that continues. We're going to assume permit fees will increase by 3.5% over the next 2 years and then slow to a 2% annual increase. There are a lot of reasons for this. Without going into too much detail, but our permit fees are very much dependent on the level of economic activity in the Bay Area and also very much on new construction. And there's some limits and some rolling over on those items. As I showed in another chart, we are getting close to 85% on cost recovery, but as we fill vacancies, we don't anticipate that we will be able to quite hit that mark. Now I'd like to talk about expenditure assumptions. Of course, our largest expenditures are personnel, number one, and then not quite as large, but second largest, service supplies. We're putting in a 3% annual increase in the five-year plan. We do have a 6% vacancy saving projected in the first year because we've got so much hiring we're trying to do, but we project that to decline to 3% in the fifth year. Service supplies are driven largely by services, professional services, and we're only anticipating inflationary increases for services and supplies. So here's the eye test, and I apologize for that, but we want to, with the idea that the financial plan is a resource to be revisited, we did want to provide all of this. The important lines, of course, are the total revenue line and the total expenditure line. In the best of all worlds, those don't diverge from each other too much. The divergence is actually shown, I should have highlighted this line, but the divergence is actually shown in the line just above the total revenue line. I apologize again, I don't have a highlight for that. But just above the total revenue line, there's a line that says transfer from fund balance. And you want that to have parentheses around it, as it does. And so you can see from our projections that, you know, within our ability to crystal ball this, really, it's zero. So we're seeing very small positive differences between revenue and expenditure, being about $400,000 to the good in 2020 and getting as high as $1.1 million to the good in 2024. So taking all of those assumptions that we just talked about, doing our best to see the future, we do feel that we can continue with, you know, without getting too optimistic with our assumptions, we can continue to do business as we are. I want to talk now quickly about our unfunded liabilities. Let's start with medical. There's medical and CalPERS. Those are our CalPERS retirement. Those are our two unfunded liabilities. Our obligation for medical is $58 million. $40 million funded, that's 68%. And there is a funding policy in place, 90% funded level. We actually think we're going to get there in 3 years. And the great thing about that is we've been funding this at a $4 million rate. We've been doing that so long, you kind of almost call that a built-in structural cost. And the great thing is when we get there, we can roll that over to something else if we want to. For instance, we could, and the board has not yet directed us to do this, but we could roll it over to our CalPERS problem. Let me talk about CalPERS. That's a $300 million obligation, of course, with CalPERS rather optimistic earnings projections. We are funded at 75%, $224 million, $75 million unfunded. And we also have here a policy from the board of 90%. And what the board has approved is that we would be putting in an extra $1 million annually above the requirement, which would get us to that point in about 20 years. But, as I just mentioned, we could in the future bring forward the idea of rolling this $4 million over into CalPERS if we wanted to accelerate that. Next steps. We'll continue this discussion of the financial plan at the next Budget and Finance Committee meeting. Then in March, we kick off the budget process. We'll have the first presentation of the budget and the proposed fees late in March, and then the second presentation to the committee late in April and the referral to the board. Be happy to answer any questions.
Director Wagon, can
I? I'm just a little confused with slide 19. We talk, once I find it, we talk about that we're no staffing increase, and it's my understanding that we're still staffing up for 617.
Yes, very much, Director Wagon Connect. So we went to the board some time ago and took pains to try to be realistic about long-term needs for staffing. And so we went to the board not just with the staffing we needed in the next month, but the staffing we needed over the next several months. And so we're still in process on that. So you're exactly correct. We're still staffing up aggressively, but that's against headcount that the board has already authorized.
Okay. So it was already in, it's already baked into the numbers.
That's correct.
Okay. The other question I had was, I'll wait on that one.
Director Abe-Koga.
Thank you. I'm still trying to understand our budget practices, and had a question if you could explain the 85% cost recovery, and you mentioned that we're not, maybe not going to get there. Mm-hmm. Is that because of the limit in how much we can increase the fees each year? Is that the 6.4%?
Yes. There are a lot of moving pieces there. So we are enabled by the state to collect 100% if we wish to. The board put in place a policy of getting to 85%. But the board didn't want the increases to be too abrupt and too hard on the regulated community. So we've been increasing at kind of a measured pace of 6.4% per year. Now, the interesting thing about cost recovery is if your costs go up, your cost recovery percentage goes down. And
okay, yes.
Since we've been tasked with quite a few new challenges in the last couple of years, we do have quite a bit of hiring going on, and our vacancy rate is such that as we fill those vacancies, that will add to our costs, and you will see our cost recovery percentage then come down. So even though we're close to 85% right now, that's with quite a few vacancies, and as we fill those vacancies, that number will come back down.
Thank you. So is for the five-year forecast, I don't know if I missed it. Is there a forecast of that as well in terms of what percentage cost recovery we expect to be given our increase in personnel if we were to continue with the annual fee increase?
Absolutely. That's a good question. I did not make that explicit, but yes, we're assuming the 6.4% per year.
And then will we be at 85% then? And then till 2024, or will we?
If we're not given any new challenges by the state, then that's approximately when we would reach that point. That's
in 2024?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. And then the other question I had with was about our OPEB and our liabilities. So once we hit 90% and the $4 million, the $4 million, is that just to pay for our unfunded past liability? Like, do we have built in our annual liabilities?
We do have to pay the annual required costs for existing and retired staff. What we don't have is, or what we didn't have, which we had zero of back in 2008, mm-hmm. was money in the bank.
For past.
Right, correct. Well, for the future of people who are already retired, but also for the already earned future of people who are not retired.
Okay. And then looking at the financial forecast, it's page
slide 27.
Yes, thank you. So I notice you're continuing an increase. You mentioned the potential recession. So is that you're still expecting an increase despite the recession? Is that recession built in here?
We are not attempting to time the economy in that sense. Okay. Rather, what we're doing is we're choosing to use relatively pessimistic values in a consistent way across the years. So we're not saying, oh, we're going to drop our revenue projections by some sudden amount in some given year. Rather, we're just saying we're going to keep our revenue projections low into the future and even lower them a little bit year over year, but nothing precipitous.
Okay, great. And then the final question I had was with our reserves. I know we have the 20% the reserve fund, general fund
minimum.
Reserve minimum.
Yeah.
I know our city does it. We're super conservative, so like we never touch our reserve. And then on top of that, we've built an economic rainy day contingency fund. Has there ever been, like, now that we actually have quite a bit of reserve, has there been conversation about creating that rainy day fund and mm-hmm. not touching the fund reserve? I don't know if that helps, and I don't know if we issue debt that it's important or not to, you know, preserve that for our bond rating and so forth, but have we had that conversation yet?
So, well, the manner in which we designate our reserves is at the discretion of the board. So we certainly could designate reserves in any manner it wished. Right now, the way the board has done that is essentially that 20% is that insurance policy, and anything above that is, anything above that is what we would hope to use for everyday downturns in the business cycle. That 20%, mm-hmm. that would be for a dire situation, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll just, minor point on the bond rating topic, we're actually not allowed to issue bonds.
Okay.
So to finance this building, for instance, we had to do certificates of participation.
Okay.
It is relevant, however,
sure.
though, that there's an underlying bond on a certificate of participation, mm-hmm. and the bond folks who willingly went forward and produced that for us were very explicit that if they hadn't seen the consistent year-over-year paying down of our unfunded medical obligations, they might have had trouble doing that. So we were very happy we were able to hold that up.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Director Chavez.
Our next contract negotiation with our employees.
Do you want me to? Director Chavez, that's coming up, actually. The current contract is completed in June 30th. So we're in the we've already initiated those contract negotiations.
And to, I just don't remember this. Did the board meet in closed session already to discuss the parameters?
We have not, no. That's we're going to try to schedule that, actually, in either February or March. I'm looking for Rex. February, in February.
Thank you.
Director Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Jeff. On this slide here, I'll start with the slide in front of me. I see in year five, I'll preface this always with, in year five in our city, I've been on city council for over 20 years, and we've been doing five-year projections for about 15 of them, and we're always broke in year five. Year five is always doomsday. And never quite turns out that way. Well, it always, and every time we put it up in front of the public, oh my God, you're going to be $3 million in debt in, you know, 5 years, and it never happens. But anyway, it's good to look at five-year projections. I had a question on the retirement pension. In year four to year five, it jumps up like about 2.2. I understand how the OPEB drops because we will have hit our 90%, so you answered that question, but how come it jumps up in year five? Is that because of vesting of new employees? Or
it's because we're assuming we're rolling the OPEB contribution over to CalPERS. But again, the board has not yet authorized us to do that. That's just an assumption.
So at that time, it would be a $2 million OPEB rollover?
Yeah, I think it's a partial rollover in that year because we've not quite. So if we were showing 2025, you would see it pop up another million or so. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And then back on the cost recovery, I know we had this discussion. What year was that, 2012?
Yeah.
Where we had that. Well, we talk about it every year, but we set that policy of 85%.
Right.
And I think I was auguring for 87.5, and I know that I got that.
I think you were too. Yeah.
Well, we ended up at 85 for some reason, and I still think that even though hitting 85% is still going to be a struggle, either I think we ought to try to get to 85% quicker, or we ought to try considering going to 87.5. I think by the time we get there, we're going to have to anyway. I see one. The dual evils of we're going to have a recession, but get this, we're still going to have inflation. And I won't go into how that works, but for our purposes, we're going to see, because for us, it'll be a bit of a recession because our property taxes will go down, and but there's still going to be inflation. In the real estate industry, there's such a low inventory, and unless the tax laws change, that's going to continue to be the same. There's no incentive to sell, so the number of transactions are going to keep to be low, and the property tax, which does change from when you sell, obviously gets reassessed. The people have been holding on to their homes for 10 to 20 years. That basis jumps up for property tax purposes. Well, that's great if you have a number of transactions, but if the transactions keep to be minimal, which I'm afraid they will be, they might even start declining because the problem that we have now is going to become even more onerous for people to go, it does not pay to sell. I'm going to have to pay all these capital gains, which is what people look at, but they forget that they've made $600,000, but they always look, well, I got to pay $150,000 on that, and it deters people. So we're going to have the dual problem for this agency, I think, of drops in a recession and drops in property tax, but we're still going to have the attendant labor force inflation. So wages are going to go up. So that's why I think long-winded speech about we should go to 87.5 or increase from 6.4 if we can go higher to 7% per year. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Director Ross. That's really a key point. And the policy as it's written is a minimum. So it does not in any way currently preclude the board from continuing to increase fees after we've reached 85% cost recovery.
Or we could speed up the pace of cost recovery?
If the board approved that, we could do that.
Okay. I think that we might want to be proactive because we were reactive, and that's why we had to, you know, we were so far behind.
That's true.
I'd like to see us ahead of the curve, at least on the pace of cost recovery. Yep. And what categories, again, are the category M mainly? That's the refinery category.
Right.
Okay. Right. And those are the bulk of the fee.
Just a few key fees are important.
The gas station one is always
the gas station one is always popular.
Yeah,
it's always a tough one.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
So why don't we put this on the agenda for, if not the next meeting, the meeting after, and have a continued discussion?
Okay.
Yeah.
Chair Rice.
Thanks, Jeff. Interesting discussion today. Really good. So I'm going to stay on slide 27. First question is, are baked into these assumptions also the variable we have absolutely no control over, which is what does PERS do in terms of their rate of return, the discount rate?
Yes. We do have the projections from PERS about at what rate these numbers will go up, and that is put into this spreadsheet.
And what are those changes?
I think we're going to see our retirement. Well, you can see the numbers there. They're going from 10 to almost 13 as you go from 20 to 23.
That put us at discount rate at the end of 5 years down at what, 6.5? I mean, I'm 5 years isn't that long of a time, but it's a lot can happen.
Right.
And I think that's probably one of the variables we have the least control over and could impact this the most.
This is absolutely true, Chair Rice. And this is one reason why I feel we're so fortunate to have this $4 million contribution to OBEP mm-hmm. be baked in as almost at this point a structural mm-hmm. expense. We've been paying it so many years. Mm-hmm. And as a result, when we do finish paying that down for OPEB, we do have that available to help us with this potential challenge. And I absolutely agree that our inability to necessarily know what CalPERS will have to do is troubling. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for us and for a lot of other entities.
So. Okay. And then my second question is, or maybe it's an observation and it's following up on Director Ross's questions around property tax revenues and the volatility there or what we can expect with regards to where they're going to go. If we look back on the recession, one of the things that was unusual about it and actually really did impact property taxes, at least in my experience in Marin County, and actually was the number of properties that then went underwater, yeah. as opposed to a recession in which that wouldn't have happened. So yeah. I think of a budget that is heavily weighted, influenced by property tax, actually to be a more stable financial scenario than other financial scenarios. And I think it really takes a pretty extreme recession to pull properties underwater. And so, I mean, that's one of the beauties of our revenue streams, right, is that we are so heavily weighted on the property tax. So then when you go to slide 8, so one of my questions was, when you look at the historical revenue trends and how large and the property tax, is that right? No, it's permit fees. So permit fees almost doubled, right, over the course 2007 to 2018. So my, and I think property tax revenues were relatively more stable and more predictable, though increasing more quickly in recent years. But on the permit fees, given that it's such a big chunk also of the revenue, how much of that is attributed to that cost recovery policy and how much to economic growth?
It's actually mostly the cost recovery policy and some new fees that were put in place.
Okay, so I think that's an important thing to note, because you did say earlier, how much is the economy really affecting our budget? And right. And frankly, in that orange chunk, it was a lot more about policy.
Yeah. Okay. Director Hudson?
Yeah, I'll say most of the stuff we've been talking about for the next meeting, but there's one thing in particular, without trying to be too funny about that, on the 20 years that I've been on the council, there's very few things that make you feel good. But last night, when I heard our budget, and we are one of only two or three or maybe five cities that had over 100% funding on OPEB, it felt pretty darn good that you're caught up. And as I look at these numbers, they're really morphed into the same thing. It's OPEB and CalPERS. And if we can get to within 90, which frankly, massage a few numbers, your high 90s, within 3 years, I wouldn't want to change this. I'd just as soon get the OPEB out of the way and focus on something similar to what Mark was talking about on our recovery for the PERS, add a percent each year. Politically, I tried to go to 88 last year. It went down hard. So good luck when you get in front of the full board. Nobody's listening.
Is there anyone else who has a... Anyone else who has questions or
comments? Just real quickly, I would like to, at some point, I know we're not at the 90% on either one of our OPEB, but I would like to discuss the value of 90 and above at some point. And the value of having a number, the 85 or 87 and a half, is it gives us backbone when the gas stations come and storm us about the cost of the cost increasing. So that's the value of that.
Okay. So to our next meeting, let's take on the contracting and at least learn more about that, and then maybe at our following meeting give more time on the agenda to this discussion about property tax versus permit fees versus cost recovery, where we could really have more time to talk about that. Is that okay with you, Katie?
Can I add one thing? I also think it would be helpful to understand how much in terms of our staffing, our employees are tied to our consistent revenues versus grant revenues.
Sure. Madam Chair, this is Jack. Just I wanted to mention, because during the course of the conversation, and I'm not sure, Jeff, if you covered this, but we have 405 positions authorized by the board.
Right.
And just to fill in the blank here, we're at about 360, I believe, right now, and Rex is nodding. And we've got a very aggressive recruitment process underway, but we have lots of folks retiring, which I suspect is probably what you all are experiencing as well. Yeah. So we're having a difficult time just keeping up. Yeah. Okay. And as you can tell by Mr. McKay's slides, it's a huge part of our expenditure here. But at the same time, we're getting a variety of new grants. I'll just mention real quickly, the VW is coming our way. The VW settlement is coming our way. Here, what's that, Damien? Probably next month. So, and the 617 continues to be a little bit of a puzzle, Madam Chair. So, I would suggest that we maybe give you a full conversation about that at your next committee
meeting. That's good too. Director Ross.
Thank you for the second bite of the apple. On the on the future agendas, also, Jeff, and I've mentioned this before, I'd like to know the value of putting a dollar down now towards OPEB or your pension, what that saves you in the long run. And as long as we're looking at 5 years to 10 years, what the return is on that investment. Right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Sure. Is there any public comment on this item? I don't see anyone. So with that, committee member comments. I think we've commented. The time, so our next meeting will be February. February 27th, and if there's no objections, we'll adjourn.